powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Let's talk Seahawks with ESPN's Brady Henderson. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Brady, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, Stacy? How you doing?
Fantastic. I wish that the weather was a little sunnier here, unfortunately. But still fine. We have a lot to talk about with the Seahawks offseason. I'm going to start with a report from Albert Breer, actually, about Mike McDonald, the Seahawks, being one of three longer interviews with J.J. McCarthy. Are you reading into any reports at all about their interest in quarterbacks or just kind of seeing it as basic research?
Yeah, I don't think that the trade for Sam Howell to back up Geno Smith necessarily rules out them drafting a quarterback. I do think that it's going to make it very hard for them to trade up like into the top 10 to get that guy. And I think, you know, depending on which draft analyst you talk to, I think some of them, if not most or all of them, would tell you that, you know, or at least they would project at this point that if you want to draft J.J. McCarthy, you got to trade up somewhere into the top 10. That was already going to be difficult for the Seahawks. Without a second round pick, it's going to be even harder now that they don't have a third round that they only have one third round pick. They had two, but then of course they gave up one for Howell. And so they're at 16. You've got three quarterback needy teams, I think at 11, 12 and 13 in Minnesota, Denver and Las Vegas. And so, you know, it's not like you can just look at the trade value chart and say, okay, what would it take to get from 16 to 9? There's that. There's also the fact that, you know, there's three other quarterback needed teams who you'd have to jump in front of who are also going to be bidding. And, you know, Minnesota has an extra first round pick. Vegas has all three of its picks in the first three rounds. So they would pretty easily be outgunned from a draft capital standpoint. So I don't think this is a sign that they're looking to trade up to draft a quarterback. And I wonder if the Sam Howell trade was maybe an indication that they realized it was going to be hard enough to do that anyways. So they went and got Howell instead. But, you know, I think this is more of a due diligence thing that, you know, anything can happen on draft day. Obviously, John Schneider knows that as well as anybody. He was in Green Bay's front office when Aaron Rodgers went from, you know, potentially the number one overall pick to number 24. And so I think they're doing their due diligence in case something like that happens. And the other benefit of it is, look, there's a ton of Michigan players who are going to be drafted this year, and a lot of them are going to be drafted really early. And so, you know, there maybe is a kind of a side benefit of, you know, you get to pick the quarterback's brain on some of these other guys that you may be interested in.
Brady, I'm not the greatest poker player, but I'm a pretty good poker observer. And when it comes down to actually playing the game, I struggle a bit. But I look at the Washington Commanders and the Patriots, and I go, man, they bluffing like a mug, man. They saying, yeah, we're listening to trades at 2 and 3. I know it's not Seahawk news, but I just want to get your opinion on that. Any way or any chance you think those guys move out of those spots?
Well, I guess the only way I would see it is if they had a pretty similar evaluation on, you know, assuming Caleb Williams goes one, if they've got a pretty similar evaluation, you know, on Drake May and Jaden Daniels, and feel like, you know, they could go with either one. And if maybe you move down a spot or you move down and you're still able to get the other guy, that's the only way I could see it happening. But, you know, I mean, they traded a young quarterback in Sam Howell, I think, with the clear idea that they were going to take another guy very early. And so, and Marcus Mariota, who, you know, at this stage of his career is a bridge guy, a solid veteran quarterback, but certainly not any sort of a long-term answer. So, yeah, I don't buy at all that they would be not interested in taking a quarterback early. But maybe, you know, maybe they would be interested in moving down a spot or two if they felt like they could still get the second or third quarterback.
We're talking with Brady from the annual league meetings. Neither Schneider nor McDonald have spoken. So my update is really about news from the competition committee about the hip drop tackle. What did you make of that? And do you think it's going to be difficult? So far, really controversial.
Well, it's controversial among the players union, for one thing. A lot of players have been outspoken about it, and, you know, current and former players talking about how it's, you know, just one more thing that's going to make it harder to play defense in the NFL. Now, the word from Rich McKay, who's a executive with the Falcons and the chairman of the competition committee, he said it passed unanimously. So he said that all 32 teams voted in favor of eliminating what they call the swivel hip drop tackle. So Rich McKay made the clarification that they're not banning all hip drop tackles necessarily, just the ones involving, you know, a player. I think the criteria that he mentioned was, you know, when you grab onto a ball carrier with both hands and you quote unquote unweight yourself. That's a new term I learned today. You unweight yourself, meaning you lift your feet off of the ground and you swivel your hips around, and then you kind of crash into the ball carrier's legs or feet. So the NFL has basically determined that that is one of the more dangerous plays in football. I think the statistic that they cited was that there's the injury rate on those types of plays is about 20% higher than any other play type in the NFL. And so and this play, according to the league, or this type of tackle is becoming more and more prevalent. The data was that I think they found 230 instances of this type of tackle that they're outlawing last year, and that was up 65% from the year before. And by the way, one of those plays was the play on which Geno Smith was injured in the Giants game. He had to leave that game for a little bit. Drew Lock came in, and then Geno Smith came back, and you know, he said he felt like he was fortunate to not have been injured worse than he was. And Pete Carroll, you know, said afterwards that he feels like that play should, he was adamant that that play should be outlawed, and today that happened.
Yeah, I don't get the fuss about that. It's, I hear people saying it's going to be so hard to tell where there's a hip drop. I go, no, it's not. It's real simple to kind of figure that thing out. But we'll see, man. Back to the competition committee. There have been several proposals when it comes to modifying the kick return. What are you hearing about that? And do you think any of these scenarios are getting some traction?
Yeah, so they did not vote on that yet. It sounds like that is still going to happen. But the idea is they're going to move up, you know, the majority of the kickoff team closer to where the ball is going to end up being kicked. And the idea there basically is to reduce the rate at which, you know, the two sides collide. So, you know, back when they're, you know, remember, it wasn't that long ago where the kickoff team would kind of have that running start and they would meet the kicker at the, it was at the 30-yard line. And so they'd have a full head of steam by the time they collided with the return unit. And the NFL will tell you that that's, you know, the most dangerous play in football. And so they're going to make this look more like what the XFL kickoffs have looked like, to where they basically put the kickoff unit, or the majority of them outside of the kicker, they're going to put them way downfield just so that they have less of a running start. You know, with the recent rule changes with the kickoff, the NFL has said that the injuries, total number of injuries have dropped, but that's in large part because, you know, there are so fewer kickoffs. Like, the majority of those balls are being kicked out of the back of the end zone, or, you know, the returner kneels in the end zone and doesn't end up bringing it out. But in terms of plays, kickoffs that actually result in a return, the injury rate has not really dropped. And so they're still trying to find ways to drop, you know, the injury rate, the rate of injuries per actual return. And this is one way they're proposing to do it.
We're talking with ESPN's Brady Henderson right now from the annual league meeting. And Brady, let's talk about the middle of Mike McDonald's defense for just a minute. You got 2 one-year deals for both linebackers. What have you learned about either of these guys since they were signed? And also, given those one-year deals, it sure feels like they're still going to need to target a linebacker in the draft next month.
Yeah, I would think so. Or maybe there's another veteran guy out there who they have their eye on. I don't know that, but they've certainly got more work to do just because, as you said, both those guys are on one-year deals, and there is really not much proven depth behind them. It's, you know, mostly undrafted special teams types who I don't know how they would feel necessarily about one of those guys having to step in and actually play meaningful snaps on defense. So, yeah, to your point, the work is not done there, but I think Baker is a really interesting guy, and you know, this morning was the it's called the AFC coaches breakfast. So all of the AFC coaches were, you know, in this big media room. So I was just kind of popping around there trying to ask some relevant Seahawks questions. And I asked Mike McDaniel about Jerome Baker, and he raved about him, raved about the person and the player, talked about how smart he is. And you know, how loved he was by all of his teammates. And, you know, it's obviously not uncommon for coaches to say nice things about their players, either while they're there or after they've left. But I'd tell you, it just seemed very genuine coming from Mike McDaniel and the way he talked about Baker and his intelligence and just the kind of teammate he was. And so, you know, we'll see what kind of player he is in Seattle. I mean, the Dolphins obviously prioritize Jordan Brooks, you know, over him, and they cut Jerome Baker in order to sign Jordan Brooks. And so that said, you know, one thing that Jerome Baker has over Jordan Brooks, he is, I think, a year or two older, but he has been more of a playmaker over his career. If you just look at the interception total, the sack total, he's got over 20 sacks in six NFL seasons, which is, that's a significant number for an off-the-ball linebacker like him. And so he's got a chance to be a nice player for them. But again, I don't think the work is done there. I don't think you can rule out Jamal Adams coming back. I think that would have to be, you know, on a very inexpensive deal with not a lot of guaranteed money. And that would be to play linebacker, as Brock Huard has talked about. But I don't get the sense that that is likely, but it is possible, I think.
AB, me and Stacey had this conversation to start our show or near the beginning of the show, and we're trying to figure out, okay, how far are the Seahawks from being a Super Bowl team? Now, we live in reality. We know that there are levels to this. But, you know, naturally doing what we do and being invested in this team, we started to try to put some pieces together. And we've seen teams at least compete without a Pro Bowl or Hall of Fame type quarterback. But if you had to look at a position, and it's probably a deeper answer than what you're going to give me, but a position that you felt like could help this team the most if they were elite besides the quarterback, what position would you look at and say, this is the group of guys who need to perform at a high level to give these dudes a chance?
Well, I think the group that needs to play a lot better than it did last year is the offensive line. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that every single issue they had was a result of bad line play. But I would tell you, based on what my own eyes saw, what some of the numbers would say, what people in the building would tell you, is that, you know, a lot of their offensive issues stemmed from just not being good enough up front. And certainly they dealt with some injury situations there. We'll see what happens with Abe Lucas. He had knee surgery, which, you know, we'll see how that, we'll see if he can really overcome the knee issue that I think sidelined him for most of the season last year. I thought they did well to really reinforce that spot with George Fant, giving him, you know, a decent amount of money to be a swing tackle. But, you know, the actual numbers in that contract are not quite as big as what was initially reported. So I think they're going to get him for about $4.5 million a season, which in terms of, you know, number three tackles with starting experience, I think it's a very reasonable deal. And, you know, Fant had some injury issues of his own, but he played pretty well last season for Houston. There definitely is work to do at guard. And I do think you're going to see them sign a guard here probably within the next week. Lakin Tomlinson is one guy to keep in mind. He has visited with the Seahawks. There's other, you know, veteran guys out there. Dalton Risner is one of them. So they're very young at that spot. It's not only that they don't really have a lot of numbers there inside, it's just that they're very young. So they really need a veteran guy in addition to possibly a draft pick there. And I think you're going to see them sign that veteran guy here within the next few days.
I would guess that if any of us had to bet, we'd assume the Seahawks would at least make an effort to trade back. It's just kind of Ben Schneider's MO. They don't have a second rounder. It makes sense. But if they were to stay at 18, do you see them addressing either the offensive line or just either side of the trenches there with that pick because of that answer?
Yeah, I mean, if they're at 16, I could totally see them taking a guard. And you know, Fatanu from UW is the one guy who's been, you know, linked to them pretty heavily in mock drafts for obvious reasons, just because it seems like that would fit on a lot of levels in terms of need, familiarity with the offensive coordinator and the O-line coach, Scott Huff, and the fact that he's been in their backyard. So they've probably got a pretty good look at him over the last few years. But, you know, the interesting thing about picking at 16 is, yes, to your point, they don't have a second round pick, and it has been their MO to trade back, to try to acquire more picks. But I think we've seen that more so when they've been in the 20s. And that's an important distinction because I think in most years, the general, not that there's a consensus, but, you know, I think most teams would probably tell you that in a given draft, you know, depending on how good it is, there might be, you know, somewhere between like 18 and 22, just to throw out numbers, somewhere in that ballpark of players that, you know, most of the league would consider true first round talent. So I think part of the thought process with them trading back all those times is that if you're picking at 24, you're probably getting a second round talent. And the difference between the type of player you could get at 24 versus the type of player you get at 34 is not that big of a difference. And so you might as well move back 10 spots, get the same caliber of player, and pick up an extra pick or two along the way. It's different when you talk about pick number 16, because again, in like a, you know, in a given draft, you might actually be getting a true first round talent like that. And if that guy is still there and if he is the best player on their board and he fills a need, then yeah, there would be a lot of reason to stay put if you didn't feel like you could move back a few spots and still get that guy.
He is ESPN's Brady Henderson. Brady, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Brady.
All right, Stacey and Bump, thanks for having me. See ya.
See ya. Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory, going inside the game. What former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
X's and O's talk, Michael Bumpus. First down, what's something the NFL's concerned about but you feel they shouldn't be?
They're concerned about the dip in scoring. You know, they're saying, like, people want to see touchdowns. I understand that.
Okay.
So in 2020, the average combined score for the NFL was 49 points per game. 21, you go 45. 23, you go 43.7. And then 2023, you go 43.54. They're concerned because in the 70s and 80s, it was very low scoring. So then they tried to change things to make it more beneficial for the offense. And the reason why I think they shouldn't worry too much about it, because they're still growing in numbers. Viewership is still going up. And I understand you want to see more scoring, but what does that do? It makes the competition committee change rules, like the hip drop. I'm all for banning the hip drop, but a lot of the NFL players are against that. And then I look at, okay, in the past four seasons, you've had two guys throw for over 5,000 yards. Last year, you had a couple guys with 1,700 yards receiving. The year before that, in 2022, you had one guy with 1,800 yards receiving. Before that, another 1,800 yards receiving. The leaders when it comes to offense. In 2023, Miami averaged 401 yards per game. 22, KC with 413. 21, Dallas with 407. And in 2020, KC with 415. These numbers just tell me big plays are still being made. The ball's being pushed down the field. The numbers in viewership are still rising. They are not dipping. Don't mess with it. Just leave it alone. You have to review some rules at the end of each year because you're trying to make the game better and safer. I understand that. But when I start reading things that the NFL is concerned about the dip in scoring, that makes me think they're going to do a bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
The game is in a good place right now. You got to tweak some things. Don't worry about the scoring. Everything's going to be fine.
Also, I'm sorry, NFL, but last year you had like a record number of backup quarterbacks enter games. You lost several starters. You got several injured offensive stars. And also, there were just great defenses. It was like the year of the defensive coordinator for a minute. Just let it be.
Yep.
Second down. TJ Watt's hoping Russell Wilson and Justin Fields can help him do something he hasn't done before. What is it?
He hasn't won a playoff game. Six-time Pro Bowler. Four-time All-Pro. He has not won a playoff game. In 17, they lose to Jacksonville. In 2020, they lose to Cleveland. 21, lose to KC. And then in 23, they lose to the Bills. So that got me thinking. I go, all right, he's never won a playoff game. There has to be some guys who never even seen the playoffs before. So I looked up a list, and the names on this list is crazy. Dick Butkus never saw a playoff game. Gale Sayers never saw a playoff game. The great Joe Thomas, who's about 100 pounds lighter now, never saw a playoff game. And you got guys also like Brandon Marshall who never saw a playoff game. This is tough. This lets you know just how important it is to build a great team. We talked about earlier, are the Seahawks a playoff caliber team? And we went through all the names and situations to where maybe quarterbacks who aren't or aren't Hall of Famers got to the Super Bowl. There are greats who will never see the playoffs in the NFL. So, JJ, I feel for you. Or TJ, sorry. TJ, I feel for you, man. I hope it happens for you. I hope Justin Fields and Russell Wilson battle this thing out and put you guys in positions to get to the playoffs so you can win. But it's hard out here, man. Don't forget that. Pat Mahomes, Tom Brady, they make it look easy. It is tough.
It's like when, obviously a different player on the other side of the ball, but when Brandon Marshall came to Seattle and had he never been to the playoffs or never won?
He's never been to the playoffs.
That's insane. Like, imagine being like a six-time Pro Bowler, or which is the case for Marshall, or like an All-Pro, and you've never been to the postseason. Because you're it. You're all your team has.
Yep.
Third down. Why do you feel the Commanders and Patriots are playing their cards perfectly?
I mean, because it's all fake news. The Patriots, Coach Mayo is saying, oh, I'm up to listen for trades, you know, for the number two spot. and so are the Commanders. Or excuse me, number three. The Commanders are saying the same thing about the number two spot. This is what you're supposed to do. But we both know both of these organizations need a franchise quarterback. And I think this is a pretty good draft class when it comes to quarterbacks. They're going to get either Caleb Williams, Daniels, or Drake, however they rank these guys. The only guys I feel like that can offer them enough to move into their slots is the Minnesota Vikings with the 11th pick and the 23rd pick. But even if you do move back to 11, you're probably not going to get the guy. But this is what you're supposed to do as an organization. Make it sound like, hey, we're up. We're going to listen. And they are going to listen. And maybe somebody gets at them with an unbelievable type of trade, and it sounds all good, but me, I don't see it happening. I think they're going to stay in their spots. They're going to pick their quarterbacks. They're going to try to build for the future. They've had decent offseasons so far. Don't mess it up by moving back to 11, and now you're stuck with maybe a Bo Nix, a guy that you're not really high on, or Michael Penix Jr. I think both those guys are good, but apparently across the league, there's about five guys better than them.
Fourth down. Quandre Diggs had an interesting tweet about the Hawks. Fill us in.
One thing I love about guys not being on the team anymore, whether it be the Hawks or the Mariners, is that they're more inclined just to get stuff off their chest. Mm-hmm. And that's what Quandre did with a tweet. He goes, the Hawks pretty much lost their identity when Chris Carson was no longer on that football team.
Oh.
So what is the identity with Chris Carson? I think he was the guy on offense that was the tough guy, that will lower his shoulder and set the tone with his physical type of play. It's crazy hearing a defensive player say that the guy on offense was the one who set the tone for this type of physicality, because typically it's the defense. So how do you get back to that? How do you get back to that physical type of personality? Or is that even what Mike McDonald and Ryan Grubb want to be? It's going to be interesting to see the shift that is made. I think with Ryan Grubb being the offensive coordinator over there, it'll be a bit more finesse. They're still going to run the football. He showed at University of Washington. He will run the rock. But I think they're going to spread the game out a bit more. So what is their identity going to be on offense? I think it's going to be multiple play action, throw the football. You still run the rock. You want to be balanced, right? But I don't think they're going to be the Chris Carson type of personality anymore. The bigger question is, what's your personality going to be on defense? What are you going to get out of your linebackers? How are you going to use your safeties in the box? How often are you going to blitz these guys? There's so many questions that are going to be answered. So when Quandre put that out there, I go, man, that's a new way to look at this whole situation, because I never heard anyone say Chris Carson was the identity of this football team. It's refreshing to hear that it's on the offensive side of the ball. But at the running back spot, you can be the physical type of runner. Let's see what type of offense and defense we get in 2024.
I think players just respect that physicality, too. Like, yeah, you're always going to get players that are like, hey, you know, our star quarterback is, you know, it. Like, he's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But guys love a physical running back. Like, there is just a universal respect from players on either side of the ball from a running back who can just plow through dudes. I would almost love for the identity as a whole for the Seahawks to once again be defensive. Mm-hmm. I just unfortunately think they're so much closer to it being an elite offense than a defense. But I hope I'm wrong. Mike McDonald, being a former defensive coordinator, kind of changes that and maybe, you know, hastens that improvement, but it feels like there's so many pieces away from them being the defense that I want them
to be. No, I think you're right. I think they're going to be more of an offensive team, and simply because Mike McDonald has to teach Dirty his ways. For 2 to 3 seasons, Mike McDonald's going to call the defense because he has to teach Dirty. Mm-hmm. So as soon as Mike is able to kind of step back and kind of just oversee everything, which he's already going to do, I think you got to lean on the side of the football that's been more productive the last couple of years.
Our biggest question of the show today was just a yes or no answer. Can the Hawks win a Super Bowl with Geno Smith? Our answer next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
You can get your questions in early for What I Need to Know. That's coming your way in less than 15 minutes. That number, 866-979-3776. Can the Seahawks win a Super Bowl with Geno Smith? This is a question that arose earlier today when Joel Klatt, who joined Brock and Salk to talk about the draft and the Seahawks, was asked about Sam Howell, and he said, look, if he's your quarterback, I don't think you're looking at a Super Bowl, but it doesn't mean he can't be good. So then Mike Salk asked Joel, hey, would you say the same thing about Geno? And Joel Klatt said that not only would he say the same thing, but that the Seahawks aren't going to go to a Super Bowl. Oh, I can't. So I don't know why it's not playing this. It's cut number 9, if you guys can find it back there. But Either way, we'll just keep it moving until we can find that cut. So when we're looking at whether or not you can be a Super Bowl team, I don't want to rehash the conversation we already had about like how many pieces. Let's just look at quarterback. Only quarterback. Can you be a Super Bowl team with Geno?
Excuse me. You can, but you need a stellar defense. You need ballers at the receiver spot. You need a great offensive line. You need a complete team. There can't be any big gaps, any big holes in your team. You can't be really bad at something as a team. You got to be well-rounded. And I always, the first name that pops in my head is Nick Foles. I'm like, how did Nick Foles hop in for Carson Wentz and win that thing? It's because that team was pretty dang complete. If you have a guy who is not a Hall of Fame type quarterback, who's only been to one Pro Bowl, you can't ask him to carry your team by himself through 17 games and get into the playoffs and win every game on his own, throwing the ball 50 times. Even with a Hall of Famer, it's hard to ask him to do that. So why would you ask a guy like Geno to do that? Is it possible for Geno to win a Super Bowl for the Hawks? Yes, it is possible. But everything has to be right. You and I talk about luck when it comes to teams all the time, because you got to be lucky. There has to be a third down that goes your way, a poor spot by a referee. Your injuries are going to have to be low. Your coordinators are on point. Everything's working well at home. And people forget the home life too, man. If your home ain't on point, it's going to be rough for you. And we saw Tom Brady go through that, and he's mm-hmm. the GOAT. So can you? The simple answer is yes, but it's all the things surrounding Geno Smith that needs to be stellar for him to lead the charge.
All right, let me see if I can get this from Joel.
Only if you feel like you have a roster that is just...
Wrong one, of course. here's his answer on Geno.
Yes, exactly. Verbatim.
Yeah, so kind of the same
Seahawks
thing.
The Seahawks are not a Super Bowl contender right now. They're just not. And because they don't have the requisite quarterback play to do that. They just don't. And it's one thing you could say, like, well, Joel Russell wasn't that when they won the Super Bowl. And to some extent, yes, that's true. But also, think of how cheap Russell was and the roster that they had around him. Think of how dominant the Denver defense was in Super Bowl 50 and the roster they had around an aging Peyton Manning, okay? Seattle doesn't have that right now. They don't have the roster around an average quarterback to say to themselves, yeah, absolutely, we can go and compete with San Francisco. You're not even the best team in your own division.
So basically, you don't have the roster to have a guy that's just good enough. To me, though, that means even more that you can't go quarterback with your first pick, that you can't go all in on quarterback. Because, yeah, you could bring that guy in, but you're missing out on opportunities to make your team whole. And it is very incomplete right now.
Yeah. It's every sport says this, right? At least I hear football, soccer, and maybe I hear basketball players say that. But it's the most team sport out there. You got 53 guys on a roster. You name me a roster on game day, they got 53 guys on the sideline padded up, ready to go, plus another, 10 standing around because they're not active for the day. It's a complete team sport. The most important position or the toughest position in sports to me is the quarterback position. So if you're playing in the most complete and the most team sport out there, and the most important position in sports, in my opinion, is not stellar, what do? You support. You support him with a defense, with an offense, with special teams, with coaches, with an organization that understands what it's going to take to win. It's all about support, man. Even Pat Mahomes needed support. Even Tom Brady needed support. People forget that Tom Brady played with a really good defense when he was over there with the Patriots. I don't know if people remember that Buccaneers defense when he won a Super Bowl was really freaking good. Matthew Stafford didn't win a Super Bowl until he got a defense that was really good. Everybody needs support. You can't ask your quarterback, even if he is Patrick Mahomes, to go out there and win it all by himself. Guys are going to have to step up. That's what needs to happen. So to support your point, yeah, that's why I look at the 16th spot and go, why would you do that? Because whoever you were to draft at 16, if that guy were available, a J.J. McArthur or whatnot, if he were available, do you feel like he's supported right now? Like adequately supported? Probably not. Could that be the start of something though? could you draft a quarterback if you do have your guy and then slowly start to build around him and you have bought yourself some time because you got this 22, 23-year-old on a rookie deal? Yeah, that's a route to go as well. But I think that they are closer to being a Super Bowl team if they just support Geno rather than going and getting a quarterback.
If we're looking at just Geno and answering, can he win you a Super or can you win a Super Bowl with Geno? I instead kind of flip it and go, well, does Geno lose you games? Because if you can't win with a quarterback, it means that quarterback is costing you games, right? It means you're the 49ers with Jimmy G, where you've got all these amazing pieces. You've got like the number two or three passing defense, and you've got all this great stuff. And Jimmy G just misses a wide open throw that would have given you the lead in the Super Bowl. You know what I mean?
Can we get off of Jimmy G, though?
But what I'm saying is,
because Brock Purdy did the same thing.
He sure did.
He didn't miss a throw to win the game, but he still ain't, you know.
But there are some moments where you go, okay, a better quarterback maybe connects there, and that's the difference between these two best teams in the league right now. But I also don't know. So I'm not saying that quarterback's Geno. I'm not. I also don't know that Geno cost them a ton of games. Like, I think it's easy to look at quarterback and go, what about those interceptions against Cincinnati? What about, playing a good game here and taking this sack here and hanging on to the ball too long here? I don't know. You had one of the worst defenses in football. It is really hard for me to look past that and look past your injuries on the offensive line and say that it's Geno. So even though I don't definitively have the answer as yes, you can, I also don't think that he's a quarterback who regularly loses you games.
No, I agree 100% with that. Every quarterback makes poor decisions. I think the most impressive season I've seen with my own eyes from a quarterback was when Aaron Rodgers threw like 40 touchdowns and 4 interceptions or something like that, and he still didn't win a Super Bowl that year. He didn't win MVP, but he didn't even win a Super Bowl that year. Mm-hmm. So even when you have individual performances like that Aaron Rodgers year where he threw for 40 and somewhere around 40 and only under what 5 touchdowns and he doesn't win, that lets you know right there that you need some help. Mahomes did win one throwing like 50 though.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, just lets you know you can throw 50 and win it. You can throw 40 and not win it. Everything else has to be aligned. You need a complete team. Therefore, I'm hoping the Hawks attack this draft and try to find guys that they need to support their current quarterback and not take a couple steps back by drafting a guy. If JJ's sitting there at number 16, I'd think twice about it. But ain't no way he's sitting there at 16.
From the 253, but if you build the team first, you never suck enough to have the capital to get a quarterback without some lightning strike luck. And I do completely understand that if you build a team that's good enough to play its way out of ever having a top 10 pick, then you're never going to be able to get that guy. However, I also look at Justin Fields going to Chicago and say, even though Fields was part of the problem there, to me, one of the issues with Chicago is they took this young quarterback, they wanted to be their franchise guy, and had no pieces around. No one to throw to, obviously, until they made their trade for Moore. No great offensive line, barely a run game outside of Fields. Horrible play on defense. Like, they had no pieces around him. They started quarterback first, and it failed.
Pick up the pieces.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm still
pick up the pieces.
It's just, partly it's because I'm not absolutely sold on McCarthy nor Penix and Nix as these like franchise superstars.
Are you ever completely sold on any of these guys in
the
draft?
No, but if the Seahawks had number one overall, I wouldn't say, oh my God, trade back and take Marvin Harrison Jr. No. I would say take Caleb Williams. He could be that guy.
Yeah, it's NFL, it's the draft's a gamble. I'm never completely sold on anybody, but I do believe in Caleb more than I have other prospects.
All right, get your questions in for What I Need to Know. Any question, text it now to the Mac and Jacks text line 866-979-3776. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Get your questions into the Mac and Jack's text line. That number is 866-979-3776. This question came in from our last segment when we were talking about whether the Hawks can win a Super Bowl with Geno. Who's the worst quarterback to win a Super Bowl?
The worst?
Everyone always points to Dilfer.
Dilfer, yeah. That's
kind of consensus.
Yeah, I'm going to allow.
My 38 years.
There's Jeff Hosteller with the Giants.
I won't even point to to Foles, who was really, really solid as a backup.
He's been a Pro Bowler.
He's been a Pro Bowler. And importantly, the thing that people always, whenever they're like, the Eagles won with Foles for like four games, like four or five games. Like,
yeah, they have like 12 or 13 wins from Carson Wentz.
And Carson Wentz was having like a dark horse MVP campaign.
Yeah.
So, yeah, don't get it twisted.
Brad Johnson maybe up there too.
Yeah. What I need to know. Y'all ready for some baseball? Who are you most excited to see play? Go M's.
Come on, it's easy. It's easy.
Is it easy?
Number 4-4.
Okay, yeah.
You already know what it is. Let's get it.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Julio, excited to see this season. I mentioned it during our conversation with Jesse Rogers, but I spent so much time looking at all these extra pieces that I kind of forget you got a superstar right here who can be MVP. I'll also say just some of the filth that's going to be coming from that rotation. Really excited to see Castillo on opening day. We got Kirby. We got Gilbert.
You know, Trevor May got me excited about Brash. I saw his listened to his podcast the other day talking about his slider, and he got me hyped to see that.
Yeah.
When he's healthy, at least.
253, Joe Namath was the worst by far. We're
Joe
going back
Namath
to 69,
was horrible.
Though?
Yeah, yeah, he was that bad. He was that
he's
bad.
He's still a Hall of Famer with more interception in his career than touchdowns.
It was like, we never seen him throw
different.
The ball like that.
370.
So I think clear across those mountains.
let's see. What I need to know, what's the last food that you overdosed on? I hit a Mexican restaurant, and I should have limited my chips and salsa intake.
I OD on pizza all the time. All the time.
Yeah.
I can eat a whole pizza by myself. I have to tell my kids, take the pizza away from me, because I will eat the whole thing.
I do this mostly with dessert. Like, I had yesterday, actually, I was home, and I got Oreo Thins, which are skinny Oreos that then you have six of them and tell yourself it's less. But they're lemon flavored. I ate most of a package. Like, I felt so sick by the end of the day.
Like the ones with like four rolls in it?
No, it only has two.
Okay.
So I had a full sleeve of Oreos and then a little bit of another one. But also it's those things of, because you used to eat, I'm not touching my 20s, but I remember my 20s. And you used to eat whatever you wanted, and then you'd be fine the next day, or you'd be fine.
Murder the Oreos.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You'd eat a whole pizza, no heartburn. You know what I mean? You'd drink a ton, you know, with some friends, and then be fine the next morning. And
ready.
Then now it's like, have a couple Oreos, and I'm like, God, I feel so sick.
Yeah, I'm gonna regret this.
I need
this.
Some roast chicken and spinach or something. But I need to know, what are the odds of DK Metcalf being traded on draft day?
Zero. He ain't going nowhere.
I don't think so either. What I need to know. Oh, this is a good one. Of the four major sports, of the four major league sports, NBA, NFL, MLB, and NHL, which is the easiest when it comes to evaluating first round talent?
I think NBA.
I think NBA
for
too.
For sure, NBA.
You see more obvious success stories with a top 10 NBA working out versus elsewhere.
Very rarely does the number one overall pick of the NBA bust. It happens, but not too often.
What would you put as last?
Major League Baseball.
I would not put NHL last. I'd probably have it second.
I think Major League Baseball, probably the hardest.
Yeah.
Because those guys are, even the best player in the draft is still 2 to 3 years away from making it.
Someone says, Peyton's still the only quarterback I've seen win a Super Bowl without a touchdown. How awful was that game? Worst Super Bowl I saw was Rams-Patriots. That game was god-awful.
13-3 from the scores.
Jeez. Yeah. Just horrible. What I need to know, can you brush your teeth with your opposite hand?
No.
Never tried.
I've never tried
either. Challenge accepted.
I'm positive I could.
I'm going to do it when I get home.
I tried to become ambidextrous when I was in fifth grade so that I could say that I was ambidextrous. So for the most of the year, I would write with my left hand. And it didn't work because I'm not ambidextrous. I just wanted to be different. What I need to know, what is the maximum crime that the excuse I was calling into the Bump and Stacey show can get you out of?
A miscommunication on tabs expiration worked.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Jesse Rogers of ESPN today. Maybe like a moving violation or something.
I think that's probably the max.
Yeah.
Because after that, it's like
you didn't put your blinker on and you cut off a police cruiser.
Okay, you guys are choosing between two snack classics, Cheez-Its or Cheetos.
Cheez-Its.
Mm.
They don't
My younger days, I'd say Cheetos.
Oh, undoubtedly.
Now I say Cheez-Its.
Same.
Yeah.
I think I would have absolutely gone, but specifically puffy Cheetos. Puffy.
You talk about Oreo thins. Cheez-It thins are incredible, too. The white cheddar ones. Yeah, they're great.
Someone said, running out on a date because of Stacy's advice. What advice did I give you? Now I need to know more. Please text back in so we know what you're talking about here. I hope it wasn't a listener we gave bad advice to. They were like, it was the worst advice I ever took. Someone said Cheez-Its are a number one seed. I don't think they are.
Of snack foods?
No, they're not.
Nah, it's the vanilla Oreos for me.
The golden ones?
The golden,
a number one seed?
Yeah.
But I think it's more of
I hide those from my kids so they don't eat them.
Number one seed is more of like, to me, a universal. So if we're talking four, you know, regions, I'm going like number one seeds. Oreos, Doritos, and then, I don't know, two other things that make sense. Because it's things that most people would agree are like, great snacks.
Nah, everyone thought Kentucky was nice this year too. Didn't they, Stacey?
Are Cheez-Its even the top seeded like cheese cracker? Are Goldfish ahead of Cheez-Its?
No, absolutely not.
Nah,
no,
I don't like the space between in the Goldfish.
Goldfish
I don't like
aren't
that.
Salty enough.
I don't like that.
Yeah, Cheez-Its are definitely from the cracker region. The number one seed. All right, you guys, that'll do it for us today. For Michael Bumpus, Curtis Rogers, Matt Nelson, I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming up next.